With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/decide. That's linkedin.com/decide. Terms and conditions apply.
Good morning, Bucknutters. Welcome to the Bucknuts Morning 5 here on Wednesday, March 11th, 2020. I am Dave Biddle. Very happy to be joined by the People's Champ, Matt Baxendell. What we're going to do on today's show is Bax and I are going to run down some of the big topics on the Front Row message board. A lot of cool topics on the Front Row message board. Well, some of them aren't very cool. A lot of interesting topics on the Front Row message board, and we're going to talk about them. Let's start with assistant coaching salaries at Ohio State. The Buckeyes, Bax, now have four assistant coaches making over $1 million. Kerry Combs making $1.4 million. Kevin, quote-unquote, Ron Wilson making $1.2 million. Larry Johnson making $1.13 million. And Greg Madison also making $1.13 million. Doug Lamorese from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, cleveland.com, wrote a very provocative piece saying he thinks these assistant coaching salaries are out of control because, you know, outside of the scholarship benefits that the players get, the players are not getting paid. What are your thoughts, Bax? Are assistant coaching salaries out of control?
No, Doug's flat out wrong. Let's be blunt here. Ohio State football prints money, and it shouldn't be an issue that they're paying their assistant coaches this much money because they have the means to do so. I'm also going to remind everybody, remember back during the Trestle era when the entire assistant coach pool was like $2 million, and we were complaining because we were going to lose people? Or we had coaches that nobody else wanted because they were just happy to collect the paycheck. It doesn't work like that anymore. And guess what? You don't like the system? Change it. Because right now, you can't give the money to the players like people say that we need to be able to do. So you know how you get players to come here? You have the best damn coaches in the land. And you have the best damn coaches in the land develop the kids as best as possible. Look at the guys who are making this money, right? Wilson is a guy who's a former head coach who's one of the best offensive coordinators in the country, right? And then you've also happened to got a guy in Madison who is the veteran of creating more good defenses than almost anybody still coaching in the country. You got Larry Johnson, who is without a shadow of a doubt the best defensive line coach in America. And then you got Kerry Combs, who just came back from the NFL, and you had to double his money to get him to come here. It's not outrageous. This is what the going rate is to keep people. If you want the best people in your profession, you generally have to shell out for them. So Ohio State paying their assistant coaches a lot of money is not a problem. In fact, it's a good thing because it means Ohio State is spending the money to win at football like we've been demanding with all the money that we as fans and alumni put into the game. So, yeah, this is good. This is what I want to see, frankly. I hope that if OSU ever has a concern about losing an assistant, it's never for money. It's only for opportunity. And right now, it certainly looks like it's only for opportunity based on what they're paying all of our coaches.
Yeah, I agree with you. Where I come down on this is if Ohio State was lagging behind and we saw, man, Alabama and Clemson, they've got four guys on their, you know, assistant coaches making over $1 million. Why is Ohio State not doing that? That would be an entire show. We'd be talking that for an entire show. Like, why is Ohio State lagging so far behind? The fact that Ohio State is right there with Alabama and Clemson and, you know, I think Ohio State might be second or third. I don't think they're number one. I think Alabama's still number one, or Clemson might be number one, but I'd have to look into that. But Ohio State's in the top three with Alabama and Clemson. I think that's exactly where they need to be. It's just the cost of doing business, so I agree with you on that. Moving on, this is a very touchy subject, but let's talk about it. You know, with the COVID-19 virus, three people in Ohio have tested positive so far, and, you know, Ohio State has canceled in-person classes for the rest of the month. They're on spring break this week. The rationale is there, even though I've said I thought that was an overreaction. Just to play devil's advocate with my own logic, the logic there is that they're going to, you know, kids that are going to on spring break, you know, when they come back, they want to give people like a couple weeks to, you know, kind of, you know, stay away from people. But Again, are people really going to quarantine themselves? I don't think so. And are people really going to go out and get tested if they're not feeling symptoms? I don't think so. But anyway, I want to talk about the spring game. Are we headed back for no fans at the spring game? Could we be headed for Ohio State canceling the spring game? We're just spitballing here. We don't know what's going to happen. Just what's your gut feeling based on everything that's happened so far with them canceling classes? You think we're going to have no fans at the spring game, no spring game at all?
I have a bad feeling with the way things are going that we're going to be seeing a lot more things canceled and a significant disruption to our economy. The way that Governor DeWine has been aggressive, I guess, would be the nicest word to use it. Right now, there are three people in Northeast Ohio who have the coronavirus, all of whom who traveled to some sort of out-of-state location, interacted with some. I think two of them went to the Nile, and another one was at like CPAC in Washington, D.C. Look, I understand the fears of this thing, but it seems to me to be a massive overreaction in a state of 12 million Ohioans that three people who are quarantined have a disease. Look, you can cancel everything you want here, and if one person from New York City travels into Columbus for something, then you know you're going to start perhaps seeing it spread. I think the other thing is that people are acting like this is Ebola or something, where like you know you're having hemorrhagic fevers. The general symptoms of this are a cough and a little bit of a fever, and it's like not something that most people like who are healthy or under 50 really have much concern from. It's a lot like pneumonia is for older folks, where you know if people start getting pneumonia at age 80, you're really worried for their health because their immune systems are compromised. So I don't know if the right reaction is for us to close a school full of 18 to 30-year-olds, most of whom they're going to be less affected by this statistically than, like, the flu. So and the thing is that the Ohio sports playoffs now for high school, they're only letting family members and, like, critical personnel attend, right? They canceled the Arnold for people to be able to view. I'm not going to be surprised when they announce that all like local schools for just kids in general are closed for 3 weeks to try to stop this. My friends who work at Chase, and they've been practicing working from home this week in various shifts, or last week in various shifts, and then this week, supposedly the entire Chase headquarters near Polaris is going to go home to do a stress test on their network to see if they can have everybody work from home at the same time. There's a lot of fear out there right now, and I do concern myself that fear is going to be more powerful than anything this virus could do. And what did Franklin Delano Roosevelt say? The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. And I think that we need to start remembering that. End of the day, I hope this doesn't cancel the spring game. It's a big outdoor event. And end of the day, too, you have to wonder about economics here. Because, like, you don't take human life lightly. In fact, that's the opposite. We should care about human life. You know, something like the spring game where you're outdoors and hopefully it's 70 and we have a really good day for it. I'd hate to see it canceled over all this. But we're going to have to wait and see. I'll admit I'm not optimistic.
Breaking out historical quotes on me. I love it. Speaking of history, let's talk about Michigan football. Specifically, the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry. Mike Valenti, who does a great job, they need to put more of his stuff on YouTube. It's always gold when they put his stuff on YouTube. They need to put his show on YouTube all the time. Does a great job, Detroit Radio, Mike Valenti. He's just always just cash money with his comments on Ohio State and Michigan. He's a Michigan State guy, for those that don't know. But his latest was, he thinks the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry is not even a rivalry anymore. And he said only Buckeye fans and Wolverine fans think it's a rivalry. It's very regional. I mean, he's got a point. Ohio State's won 18 of the last 20. They've won 8 in a row. Now you have Joe Bolden, who was a captain for Harbaugh's first team at Michigan. It was 2015. I had to look it up. I forgot it was that recent that he was a captain at Michigan. He played at Michigan from 2012 to 2015. I will say one thing they did not bring up, though, on the Valenti show backs is that Bolden, it's like neighbors with Kerry Combs. He didn't play for Combs at Coleraine, but Bolden went to Coleraine. He was at Coleraine when Kerry was at UC. So they know each other. So I think that's a, That's probably the biggest reason Joe Bolden's at Ohio State right now is the Kerry Combs relationship. But still, Greg Madison the year before that, Al Washington, who actually has more ties to Ohio State by far than he does to Michigan, of course. But still, my thing is, I don't think Ohio State fans should care. You know, if people outside of the rivalry don't think it's a great rivalry, great. I would take that 100 times out of 100 over Michigan winning some games so people in California can think it's still the best rivalry in sports. But your take on Valenti saying it's no longer a rivalry between Ohio State and Michigan because the Buckeyes have dominated.
Well, it's still a rivalry to me, damn it. End of the day, if they can't keep up, then, you know, tough cookies. Ohio State should literally step on them every opportunity they get. And by the way, they are one reasonable coach up there who can actually recruit Ohio again away from making this a rivalry. So, you know, it's like, what's the old quote that, you know, freedom is only guaranteed for the next generation or whatever like that? Look, as long as Harbaugh's there, I have a pretty good feeling Ohio State's going to trounce them on a consistent basis. If Ohio State is literally looking at maybe landing the top three kids in the state of Michigan, something's very, very wrong with their program. But I know a lot of Buckeye fans remember the end of the Cooper era, whenever the Michigan fans said their biggest rivalry was Notre Dame or Michigan State, and it wasn't even Ohio State anymore.
What
right?
are you talking about? What's this era you're talking about? The John Cooper era? No, I don't think that ever happened. Go ahead.
In the days of yore, when men were men and battles raged across the land, there was a coach whose name was Coop, and he could not win. He was a scoop. Yeah, there he is. I don't know. But, like, end of the dish.
Because he was 2-10-1. Okay, whatever.
He said, hey. Flashback. No Buckeye said, yay. And every loss came their way. Yeah, so I'm as the... As the younger generation here who got accepted to Ohio State in the fall of 2001, who didn't live through the Cooper disaster here, I am the literal definition of a spoiled Buckeye, right? So for all you people who are like, I sat through the Cooper era and you don't understand how hard
that was
to be a Buckeye fan.
That's me. I'm the one talking down. I'm not even that much older than you. That's me. Yes, that's me. You just described me. Go ahead.
Yep. So, all you people, knowing full well that I'm spoiled Buckeye, pay attention to the fact that I'm not saying this is not a rivalry anymore. This is still a rivalry. Because the second they get a legitimate coach who can recruit Ohio up there, they start to erode into all of the benefits Ohio State has. This could be a rivalry again. Is it this year? Probably not. Will they be good this year? Eh. End of the day, they're not going to really beat Ohio State with Harbaugh there. We all get that. But what happens when Matt Campbell goes there? What happens if, God forbid, Luke Fickell goes there, right? Those are the times that you actually talk about it being a major rivalry again. But right now, yeah, the guy in charge of that program he's gone autopilot. And I wouldn't be surprised if they had an 8-4 kind of year this year that ended with Ohio State trucking them, and he went back to the NFL.
Hold on, I just threw up a little bit. You said something about Luke Fickell at Michigan. I just know. No. All right, last topic on the show. I know you brought that up before. I just couldn't let that go. Cade Stover moving to tight end. I like this. I think he's going to stick there. He seems like that's a natural fit. He was kind of, they weren't sure. He played safety in high school. Imagine that. That's a pretty big safety. He's 6'4", 255 pounds. And I know he didn't weigh that much in high school, but still, we were debating, is he going to be a linebacker? Is he going to be a defensive end? Well, no and no. He's moved to tight end, and I think it's going to stick. I don't think he's going to play a ton this year because they're pretty veteran at tight end. Now, maybe he will play more than I think. I don't think he's going to rot on the bench or anything like that, Bax, but I think in the future, Cade Stover could be a really good weapon at tight end. I know Buckeye fans are probably laughing, ha-ha, like we even use the tight end. But seriously, I think this guy could be a future NFL tight end. I think he's got that kind of athletic ability, and he seems to have taken the position very well. Just your thoughts on Cade Stover moving to tight end.
Well, I think just based on sheer numbers, you had to do it this year. I mean, let's look at where the numbers game is right now. You got two seniors. You got a junior now. And then you've got Cormonta Hamilton, who's really just not done anything yet. So that's your tight end depth chart. You need to get a younger body in. Sam Hartle will arrive next year. You'll have hopefully one more year at Rucker if he doesn't have the year where we finally throw the tight ends and we have an early departure tight end to the NFL. You know, that we've been waiting for forever. Remember, it was going to be Jake Stoneburner, and then it was going to be, I don't even want to get into it. So, like, I think there's a big difference between Ohio State using their tight ends and Ohio State sending tight ends to the NFL, though. Like, we've had NFL tight ends. numerous times in the last 20 years. We just haven't really thrown them the ball much since Ben Hartsock. So I think this is a smart move, because if you look at the depth chart, you're going to need more than the, I don't know, one functional tight end body right now on the roster. And I guess for Stover, the pathway to the field is much shorter at tight end, right? Like, you've probably got three guys ahead of him right now in Farrell, Houseman, and Ruckert, right? And Ruckert splits out a little bit more than the others because of his skill set. But, you know, was he going to get on the field at defensive end this year? Almost certainly not. Was he getting on the field at linebacker this year? Almost certainly not. You know, next year he could be the number two guy, the number one guy at tight end, depending how the year goes. So I think the pitch of him moving was probably just that. Look, we think you can develop really well in this role. And by the way, you'd probably be on the field a year or two sooner than you would be otherwise. Why wouldn't he jump at it, you know? So I think it's a smart move, both from a depth chart perspective and from an individual perspective for Cade Stover. And lest we poo-poo the depth chart perspective, I could bring up our running back situation to those of you who would probably kill for another running back on the depth chart right now, if you're anything like me. So this is a move that maybe was a little surprising, but in the end of the day, it's probably the most prudent move, and it's probably what's best for the kid right now.
Great stuff, as always, from the People's Champ, Matt Baxendale. I appreciate it, Bax. You can catch his column every Sunday on Bucknuts. It is The Bucket. Thanks again to Bax, and thank you to all listeners out there for tuning into the show. I appreciate it. Hope everyone has a great day. Let's try the Buckeye swag, best damn band in the land.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus.
Magical!
Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.